This is The Current.
As the Foreign Affairs article points out, when Russia stumbled off its superpower pedestal, it left the U.S. standing alone as the most powerful nuclear force in the world today. To help us understand the scope of the U.S.'s nuclear capabilities and what the country did to secure and maintain its superpower status, we're joined by Frieda Berg, and she is a senior research associate with the Arms Trade Resource Center of the World Policy Institute. She is in Amherst, Massachusetts this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Matt.
We've just heard how dilapidated the Russian nuclear program is today. How does that compare to what the United States has?
Well, the U.S. nuclear arsenal is vast and redundant and growing every day. The United States has more than 10,000 nuclear weapons in its stockpile, almost 7,000 of which are ready to go the moment that President Bush or another leader gives the word, within 15 minutes. Either from land-based nuclear weapons in the Midwest, from bombers flying all over the world, and submarines deep below the ocean, the United States could launch a nuclear attack. We have 1,600 intercontinental ballistic missiles. We've got almost 3,000 submarine-launched ballistic missiles. And then we have more than 1,000 nuclear weapons that can be dropped from bombers.
And this is an arsenal that, as you say, is growing?
That's right. The United States, the Cold War is over. The Soviet Union has fallen. And the United States is without rival in the nuclear arena and certainly in the military arena. And we are spending more on nuclear weapons today than we did at the height of the Cold War.
What's the motivation for that? What's the policy that's falling under?
Well, there's a couple things that are going on, and one that is that, you know, George Bush has populated his administration with some of the most diehard and ideological Cold Warriors that you would ever hope to meet. And so in their heads, they're still very much fighting the Cold War. And then there's this new idea, this idea of hyperpower, that Paul Wolfowitz, the former Deputy Secretary of Defense, first articulated, that in the aftermath of the Cold War and the sort of bipolar world of the U.S. and the Soviet Union, that the United States would seek to be a hyperpower, that it would prevent and dissuade rivals from even developing into rivals that could match or compete with the United States, and that's one of the main goals, that's a plank of U.S. foreign policy, is to dissuade potential adversaries from even pursuing a nuclear buildup that would hope to surpass U.S. military might.
But as you
basically, they're saying, don't even try it, don't even think about it. We're so far ahead of you that that there's no reason to even try.
But as you suggested, the Cold War is over. The U.S. is now engaged in what they call the War on Terror. Is that part of the motivation as well?
Well, certainly. As part of U.S. national security strategy, after the beginning of the War on Terror, the United States, for the first time, articulated that it would have no problem launching a nuclear attack against a non-nuclear country. And it rattled off a number of names, including Iran, which is a nascent nuclear power. It's pursuing nuclear weapons, but it's certainly, even by CIA assessments, 10 years away from being able to actually launch a nuclear attack. But throughout the Cold War, you know, nuclear weapons would only really be used against the Soviet Union, and there was this idea of MAD and mutual assured destruction. But now the gloves are off, and within the context of the War on Terrorism, the United States is threatening use of nuclear weapons against Saddam Hussein. They thought about using low-yield nuclear weapons there. They've explored trying to get Osama bin Laden using nuclear weapons that can bore into mountain hideouts And they're considering the same thing against Iran as a way of destroying this nascent nuclear program.
But there are some people that say that that threat, very much like with mutually assured destruction, that that threat keeps the peace.
Well, those people are wrong. I mean, as we can see, U.S. nuclear, the ramping up of U.S. nuclear weapons has led to India and Pakistan both building, testing, and threatening the use of nuclear weapons against each other. We see Iran pursuing nuclear weapons. We see North Korea pursuing nuclear weapons. Israel is an unacknowledged nuclear power, has more than 200 nuclear weapons. And this has all happened, or all sort of come to a head since the end of the Cold War, and since the United States has sort of broken through and shredded this very, very complicated and tight web of treaties that that really saved the world, and not to be dramatic about it, but saved the world during the Cold War, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, there's a whole alphabet soup of treaties negotiated between the United States and the Soviet Union, and other countries of the world were brought into that. And on this sort of hyperpower track, where the United States is the sole superpower and has sort of made itself the exception, other countries are sort of left without a choice of pursuing nuclear weapons on their own. And they say, well, it looks like everybody has to have a nuclear weapon in today's context. So I think we're going to see more countries pursuing that.
Does that, we're just about out of time, but does that leave us in this new era of a Cold War, the potential for something else to come out, whether it's from Russia or other countries?
Matt, I would say we have to start thinking about being in a hot war in a unipolar context. And the ramifications of that, the meaning of that, is deep and very, very disturbing. And I think we all need to sort of wake up to that new reality.
Frieda Berrigan, appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt.
Frieda Berrigan, a senior research associate with the Arms Trade Resource Center of the World Policy Institute, that's based in New York City.
The Current on CBC Radio 1.